Episode 2 of Behind the Line. I am your host, KC. Follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Man, did we get fucked royally on our college football bets this weekend. We took three games, Oregon plus 3.5, Northwestern plus 6.5, North Carolina plus 11.5. North Carolina, the game that I felt the worst about, the only game we covered. Two games in a row, we lost the cover on the final minute of the game. Basically, the final play of the game. Losing the Northwestern cover was especially fucked up. They're driving down the field in the final minute of the game. Scores 10-7. Stanford's got the lead. Northwestern fumbles the fucking ball with under a minute to go. And Stanford runs it all the way back for a touchdown in the backdoor cover. In the process, basically fucking me in the ass with a rusty spike. Oregon, on the other hand, completely dominates Auburn for three quarters of that game. I mean, Oregon was unbelievable in that first half. They should have been up 20 points in that first half. One drive, they turned it over on downs, I believe, in the red zone. Another time, they turned the ball over. With 9 seconds to go, they blow the cover. Bo Nix throws a pretty pass for a touchdown. Auburn ends up winning the game outright. I was not really impressed with Auburn as a whole on Saturday. I really feel like Oregon lost that game more than Auburn won it. However, I was pretty impressed with freshman quarterback Bo Nix. The kid had a shaky first half. He really didn't look good in the first half of that game, which is understandable. First start of his career. You're on a big national stage. You're basically playing in the game of the week in the first game of your career. But the kid had one hell of a fourth quarter. Auburn scored 14 points in that fourth quarter. He led them down the field on that final drive of the game. It's not easy to make a comeback like that against a pretty good Oregon defense on the national stage with the eyes of America on you. What I also wasn't impressed this weekend was the SEC as a whole. The SEC was fucking embarrassed. You know, every year, all we hear is that the SEC is the most dominant conference in college football. In the past, that was the case. But damn, did the SEC get embarrassed this weekend. SEC schools lost non-conference games to Wyoming, North Carolina, Memphis, and Georgia fucking State. Georgia fucking State beat Tennessee in Knoxville on Saturday. Now, what a fall from grace for Tennessee in the football program up there. Tennessee was dominant in the 90s, early 2000s under Philip Fulmer. I mean, you had Peyton Manning, T. Martin won a national title there. What was that, 98, I believe it was? But this program has been an eyesore for the SEC for at least the past 10 years. It seems like ever since Phil Fulmer basically snitched on Alabama years ago and got them put on probation, the people in Knoxville have suffered through some of the worst losing seasons. It kind of just goes to show you that karma is real, and you should never snitch on anyone under any circumstance. But to put the loss into perspective, Georgia State was 2-10 last season. Now, if I ask you guys to name which conference Georgia State played in, I bet 90% of you couldn't tell me. They're in the Sun Belt Conference, in case you were wondering. Sun Belt Conference has won 6 games against the SEC and over 100 tries. I think the record is something like 6-106, 107, something like that. Who fucking cares? It's awful, whatever it is. Rarely happens that a Sun Belt Conference team beats an SEC team. Now, outside of Alabama and Georgia, I don't really see any other strong teams in the SEC just yet. You know, of course, most teams haven't been tested. We're only 1 week in the year. It's still early. Florida and LSU might surprise me. Maybe Texas A&M. Who knows? We'll get to see a little bit this weekend. Clemson will play Texas A&M. LSU is playing Texas. I don't see Florida, LSU, Texas A&M competing for a playoff spot, though. I just don't see it. But once again, however, the college football schedule for next weekend is a steaming pile of shit. As I was watching ABC Saturday night during the Auburn-Oregon game, Kirk Herbstreit actually commented a little bit on the weakness of the opening weekend games that we got this weekend. He then went on to say that this coming up weekend, week two, was going to be much better, which it's hard not to be better because week one was absolutely horrendous. I'm not saying we didn't have some good games. We had a couple. But as far as the level of competition goes, I mean, it was very lopsided. Like we talked about on Friday, the only game with top 25 teams was Auburn and Oregon, which I will give credit, that was a phenomenal game. Beginning to end, that was a phenomenal football game. But we do have a top 10 matchup next weekend, LSU and Texas, like I said. And we have a top 12 matchup with Clemson and Texas A&M. However, outside of those two games, the rest of the top 25 schedule is pathetic. The Pac-12, we've got Stanford playing USC. USC's not ranked. Stanford was ranked 25. I haven't looked at the new polls yet. They might go up a little after beating Northwestern. Always interesting. You know, that's become a bit of a rivalry game over the past few years. But the rest of the top 10 is ridiculous. Cincinnati's on the road at Ohio State. Army on the road against Michigan. New Mexico State and Tuscaloosa to play Alabama. Murray State goes to Athens to play Georgia. South Dakota heads to Norman to play Oklahoma. And some team called UT Martin is going up against Florida in the Swamp. Now let me ask you something. Do any of those fucking games interest you? Because I'm not interested in one of them. All six of those games will be won by 30 plus points. Hell, most of them will be over with by halftime. Now, I don't want to get into another rant like I did on Friday's show about the bullshit that we seem to get week in and week out in college football. But this is just another example of it. The top programs play 2 to 3 games each year against evenly matched opponents. The rest of their schedules, full of fluff games against weak-ass teams. Florida playing UT Martin is the equivalent of the United States going to war against Switzerland. Now, some might say, oh, the weak teams, they can be interesting. Louisiana Monroe beat Alabama in 2007. Appalachian State beat Michigan in 2007. Georgia State just beat Tennessee. Who fucking cares? I would much rather watch Ohio State play Alabama, Oklahoma play Michigan, or Clemson play Tennessee than watch those three games. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. You know, Tennessee, the last decade, has been so bad that they might as well be the equivalent of UT Martin or Murray State right now. I mean, Clemson would beat Tennessee by 40 points right now. But I digress. I mean, at least we have a couple of big games to look forward to next weekend. Now, before I get into some NFL news, I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Jalen Hurts. I've never been a big fan of Jalen Hurts when he was the quarterback at Alabama. Won a national championship. But he was always a game manager. I always said when Jalen Hurts was at Alabama that if you got Alabama down by double digits, then the game was over. Because Jalen Hurts didn't have the ability to bring the team back on his arm alone. Phenomenal runner. But I just never saw him be able to bring a team back just by being able to throw the ball. Consequently, his only two losses at Alabama were to Clemson and Auburn, both losses by double digits. Now, I don't know if Nick Saban was holding him back or what. Because the Jalen Hurts that I saw Sunday night was a guy that I've never seen before. Jalen Hurts fucking balled out. Threw for 332 yards, 3 touchdowns. Completed 87% of his passes. That's the stat that impresses me the most. Completed 87% of his passes. Now, the fucker also ran for 176 yards and 3 touchdowns. 6 touchdowns Sunday night. Now, he's the only player in the past 15 years to throw for over 300 yards and 3 TDs and rush for over 150 yards and 3 TDs. besides Johnny Manziel. Now, I'm not going to get too excited here. I mean, he was playing against Houston. Not exactly a football powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination. But I was glad to see Jalen Hurts get some immediate success in his first game under center at Oklahoma. You know, a lot has been made this offseason about him transferring. He came into Norman with a lot of hype. And first game out, he puts himself into the Heisman conversation. Now, Oklahoma really doesn't get tested until October 12th when they play Texas in their annual rivalry game. So he should have some big games between now and then with the weak-ass schedule they face first 5 weeks of this season. So props to Jalen Hurts. I'm happy for him. Now, let's get to the NFL. The LA Chargers have given running back Melvin Gordon permission to seek a trade. Came out over the weekend. Gordon's been holding out of camp. As of right now, he won't be suited up for the regular season opener this Sunday against the Colts. Gordon's on the last year of his rookie deal, slated to make just under $6 million in 2019. Chargers offered him $10 million. He declined. Wants to be paid in the range of $14 to $15 million a year, like your Todd Gurley's of the NFL. Now, we talked about this on Friday when we were talking about this Ezekiel Elliott. Running backs in the NFL have a limited time to make money, especially big money. Melvin Gordon's 26 years old. If history tells us anything, he's at or near the end of his prime. Now, he had a great year last year. He's been a great running back for the Chargers. Really boost that offense, helps Phillip Rivers out a lot. Now, obviously, the Chargers are apprehensive about committing big money to him, and understandably so. It was reported over the weekend by Pro Football Talk that no one is going to pay Melvin Gordon what he wants and give the Chargers real value in a trade for him. Now, basically, the Chargers allowing him to seek a trade is a tactic. So Gordon realizes that he really has no leverage in this situation. Because if the Chargers can't get what they want in a trade for him, they're not going to let him go. And if another team's not going to pay Melvin Gordon, then he's not going to want to leave. Now, LA General Manager Tom Telesco has said that they'll be willing to negotiate a contract with Gordon, but they want to wait until after the 2019 season. Which, that's obvious, because after the 2019 season, he's going to be a fucking free agent anyway. So that's a moot point. Now, I don't see the Chargers backing down here. This is a little bit different than what's going on in Dallas. The Chargers have an easy September schedule as far as NFL standards are concerned. Open up against the Indianapolis Colts, who just lost their franchise quarterback to retirement. Travel to Detroit to play Matthew Stafford and the shitty-ass Detroit Lions. At home against the Texans. Then they travel to Miami to play a Dolphins team that, for all intents and purposes, it seems like they're trading away all their best players in an effort to tank the season. I saw a report over the weekend where the Dolphins are highly interested in obtaining the number one pick in the draft to pick up Tua, the quarterback at Alabama. Which, it kind of shocks me. It doesn't shock me that the Dolphins are tanking. The Dolphins were going to be fucking terrible either way. But taking the number one overall pick to draft a quarterback at Alabama? When's the last quarterback from Alabama that has been successful in the National Football League? Joe fucking Namath? I can't name one other. I mean, A.J. McCarron's been a career backup. Every other quarterback that's came out of Alabama is either not made it in the NFL or been a backup and out of the league in 2 or 3 years. But I digress. Back to Melvin Gordon and the Chargers. The Chargers should be favored in every game, the first 4 games of the season. Realistically, they could go 4-0 and head into the month of October undefeated. I think that once Gordon realizes that he has no leverage, I think he'll be back by week two against Detroit. Think he'll end up playing out the season under his current contract and walk in free agency. Now, I talked about the Ezekiel Elliott contract situation on Friday. And it looked at certain points over the weekend that Elliott and the Cowboys were actually close to agreeing to an extension. Then I wake up this morning and it doesn't seem to be the case. Seems both sides have agreed on the amount of money and the length of the deal, but the disagreement is on how the money is going to be paid out, which is a pretty big fucking deal. I mean, that's a big fucking deal. There's really not too much detail being given on the contract status other than that right now. My assumption is that the Cowboys are wanting to backload the contract, and Zeke is wanting the bulk of his money up front. And, I mean, that makes sense for both sides, obviously. That's always how it's going to be. Dallas still has to pay Dak Prescott. Obviously, Zeke wants his money towards the beginning of the contract because if he gets hurt or he's got a drop in production or, you know, Dallas has another running back come out of nowhere and Ezekiel Elliott is not needed as much, then Jerry Jones will cut his ass and he won't get shit. So, obviously, Zeke wants a lot of his money up front and you can't blame him. Now, I'm seeing conflicting reports as of Monday afternoon when I'm recording this as to how close or how far apart both sides are in the contract negotiations. I saw a report by Jane Slater at the NFL Network earlier today, and she's actually reporting that both sides are still far apart in negotiations. And then you have Mike Leslie at WFAA in Dallas saying that a deal should be done in the next 1 to 2 days, by Wednesday, when the Cowboys have their second practice, basically. In my opinion, I feel like a deal will be finalized sometime this week. You know, unlike the Melvin Gordon situation, I feel like Zeke has a lot of leverage going into his contract negotiations. Now, like I talked about on Friday, I think Zeke is critical to the Dallas Cowboy offense and the success of that franchise. And I mean, in my opinion, he's the cornerstone of the Cowboys offense. And Dallas doesn't make the playoffs last year without Ezekiel Elliott. Now, before I get out of here today, I wanted to talk about Peter King's column this morning. Peter King is my favorite, quote-unquote, NFL insider. I think he's the best NFL insider in the country. Adam Schefter's good, but to me, Peter King is the end-all, be-all when it comes to NFL insiders. As many of you probably know, he releases a column every Monday. It's called Football Morning in America. And this week, he gave his playoff and his Super Bowl predictions. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I just wanted to go over it real quick and just kind of give my two cents on it. So Peter King, his NFC playoff predictions, and I'm going to list them in order from 1 to 6. He's got the Saints as the 1 seed, Philadelphia 2, LA Rams 3, Green Bay Packers 4, Chicago Bears 5, the 49ers 6. His AFC, he's got the Chiefs at 1, Steelers 2, Pats 3, Colts 4, get to that in a minute, Chargers 5, the Houston Texans at the 6th seed. Now, as far as his Super Bowl predictions concerned, he's got the Chiefs and the Saints in the Super Bowl. Now, me personally, I agree with him here. I actually had the Saints winning the Super Bowl this year. I think after this season, the Saints win the Super Bowl, Drew Brees rides off into the sunset and retires. And I'm not trying to be a homer here because I am a Saints fan. But with the offseason moves that the Saints have made, picking up Jared Cook at tight end to fill that gap that's been there since Jimmy Graham has left in 2015, traded over the weekend for Kiko Alonso, great linebacker out of Miami, I think the Saints are actually going to be better in 2019 than they were last year. And that's a scary fucking thought because through 13 weeks last year, the Saints were fucking dominant. I think that towards the end of last season, the last 4 weeks of the year, that Drew Brees was playing hurt. Even going into the playoffs, Drew Brees did not look like the same quarterback after that loss in Dallas on that Thursday night game. I believe it was week 14. He didn't look the same. He got beat to hell and back by the Cowboys that game. That was actually the first bad game the Saints had played all year besides the opener against Tampa Bay when Fitzmagic got to them. I believe they lost 48-40 in the Superdome. But after that Dallas game, Drew Brees' accuracy was down. He struggled throwing the ball downfield for the past couple of years, but he really couldn't throw the ball downfield after that game. The Saints' offense just looked so limited after the Cowboys game, going into the last 4 weeks of the year, even into the playoffs. I wasn't really impressed with Drew Brees through the playoff run last season. Now, I know he had a decent game against Philadelphia, but I think the Saints actually got lucky in winning that game. I mean, the Eagles are driving the ball under 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And if Nick Foles doesn't make a bad throw and the Saints intercept it, I think the Eagles actually win that game. Now, we all know what happened against the Rams. You know, no fault of the Saints. They got fucked royally by the no call. Everybody's seen it by now. I actually think if the Saints would have beat the Rams, they would have beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And Drew Brees would have retired already. Now, New Orleans has a brutal, brutal schedule early on in the season. Open up on Monday Night Football this week against the Texans. Head out to Los Angeles to play the Rams. On the road the next week against Seattle, then back home against Dallas. All four of those teams made the playoffs last year. Now, the schedule eases up a bit after that. And then, to be perfectly honest with you, I can see the Saints being 3-1 going in October. I can also see them being 2-2. Those road games at Los Angeles and Seattle are tough, especially Seattle. But I see the Saints going on a late season run. I think they'll be the number one seed again this year. I actually agree with Peter King. I don't see a team in the NFC South that's going to contend with New Orleans for the division this year. Atlanta, Carolina, Tampa Bay, I don't see either of the three of those teams contending with New Orleans for the NFC South crown. But back to Peter King and his NFC playoff picture. Did you notice anything missing from what I said out of those six teams? The Dallas Cowboys. Peter King has the Dallas Cowboys missing the playoffs. And he's making this prediction with the assumption that Ezekiel Elliott will be available and playing in week one. So that's not the entire reason that he's got him missing the playoffs. Peter King makes a good point, and I hadn't really thought about this. He believes that the constant contract talks will impact the locker room, and that makes a lot of sense. I agree with him on that. Even after Ezekiel Elliott gets signed and that's put behind Dallas, all we're going to hear about all season long is the media bringing up Dak Prescott and his new deal. So, it's going to be interesting. I don't think the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs either. But I do disagree with Peter King on one thing. He's got the San Francisco 49ers as the number six seed. Now, I'm no Jimmy G hater by any stretch, but I wasn't really impressed with what I saw from him last year. Now, I know the sample size is really small, but the NFC's fucking loaded. The NFC this year is loaded. And in my opinion, I still feel like the 49ers are a year away from making a playoff run. I take San Francisco out. I actually put Seattle as the number six seed in the NFC. Now, onto the AFC, it really blew my mind how he's got the Indianapolis Colts as the number four seed and winning the AFC South. Now, we all know Andrew Luck's gone. He's not coming back in 2019. Jacoby Brissett, who will be the Colts starter, was a fucking disaster in 2017 when he filled in for Andrew Luck, when Andrew Luck sat out that year with an injury. Now, don't get me wrong, the Colts have vastly improved since 2017. The defense went from being the 30th ranked defense in the league to number 10 last season. The offensive line, in my opinion, one of the best in the NFL right now. However, Jacoby Brissett isn't anywhere near the level of player that Andrew Luck is. Now, in my opinion, Jacoby Brissett's one of the worst fucking quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of accuracy, when accuracy is concerned. He completed 59% of his fucking passes in 2017. Threw for 13 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Your elite quarterbacks in the NFL can throw for 13 touchdowns in 6 games. Brissett managed to throw 13 in a 16-game schedule. That's fucking awful. The accuracy really, really concerns me with him. Now, the offensive line was not what it is. It's a whole lot better now, like I said, than it was in 2017. But I don't think that that was his issue at all, because you go back and look at his college stats, he was a 58-59% passer in college. So, unless something has changed dramatically with Jacoby Brissett throughout this training camp, and now he has been getting first-team reps since April, so this has not been just thrown on him, but and like I said, unless something dramatically changed, I can't see the Colts making the playoffs. I think it would be a miracle if the Colts went 7-9. I could see it happening because the defense will keep them in close games and keep the scoring down. But the AFC South, I believe that that's the Texans' division to win. I also believe the Tennessee Titans will be much improved this year as well. So I take Indy out. I've actually got the Texans as the number 4 seed, bumped them up from number 6 like Peter King had them. I got the Texans winning division, being the number 4 seed. To replace the Texans at number 6, I think the Tennessee Titans will be the surprise team of 2019 and make the playoffs. I actually think the Tennessee Titans have a good shot at winning the division. I don't think they will. I think they have a shot. Their defense is fucking stout. Has been for the past year or two. I mean, Mike Vrabel, great defensive coach. They got better in the offseason. Picked up Cameron Wake. The offensive line was good last season. They also improved that area of the offseason. Got a great left guard and Roger Saffold from the Rams in free agency. They also added Ryan Tannehill to back up Marcus Mariota. This was very interesting to me. Very interesting to me. It's going to be interesting, too, to see what Mike Vrabel does moving forward at the quarterback position. Marcus Mariota is one of those guys, you just don't know about him yet. There are some games where he just shows flashes of greatness. And you think, wow, this guy could be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And then there's other games where I bet them, where Tennessee's been on a roll, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy into the Titans. They might be getting points, whatever the situation may be. And Marcus Mariota makes me want to drive my fucking head through a window because he goes out and lays a fucking egg and has a shit game. You just never know what you're going to get with Marcus Mariota. You can kind of say the same thing about Ryan Tannehill as well. I really feel like if Marcus Mariota can't be what he was in 2016, then he's not going to be the starting quarterback in Tennessee for long. I think if EA struggles opening the year, I think Mike Vrabel actually gives the nod to Ryan Tannehill. I believe Ryan Tannehill has the perfect opportunity here to resurrect his career. And I believe he will. I think Marcus Mariota might struggle through the year or to start the year. And I think Mike Vrabel is going to go with Ryan Tannehill. And he'll lead the Titans into the playoffs as the 6th seed. It's going to be an interesting NFL year. I'm excited about it. Got the Bears-Packers on Thursday night. Great way to kick off the year. NFC North rivalry game. I'm out of here, guys. I'll be back Friday with my college football bets for what's going on Saturday. Hopefully the fucking betting gods have pity on me and don't fuck me 2 weeks in a row. That was brutal last weekend. That was fucking brutal. Saturday is going to be the first NFL podcast that we have. I'll give you my NFL picks for Sunday. So I'll see you guys on Friday. Have a good week.